Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to the second hour of Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us. Our topic this hour, why are you pro-choice? Do you disagree with what the Catholic Church would say is the basic morality of that life is inviolable, that we cannot take the life of the unborn any more than we can take the life of the born? Do you have a disagreement on that count? Well, we'd love to take your call today. We're very happy to take your call. Why are you pro-choice? 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers, is taking your calls and questions today. He is the author of Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issue, and among the 20 Answers books that Catholic Answers produce, he wrote the one on abortion. So he is well prepared to take your calls. And I hope, Trent, both you and I will be charitable and respectful to all the callers. We're not looking for a fight. We're looking for a conversation, right?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, certainly discussions can be spirited, but I think that people can have spirited yet civil discussions on very important issues like these.
So you're welcome to be spirited. Call in with your but you don't have to be spirited. 888-318-7884 is the number. We go now to George in Des Moines, Iowa, listening on 94.5 FM. George, you're on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi, Trent.
Hello.
Hello. Thank you. You know, we have leaders, you know, we're a republic, and they're all different. None of them are the same, and someone may line up with our ideology on the surface, but we ultimately don't know what they're going to do in the future. And I'm just really curious for if you consider yourself a conservative Christian who's pro-life, is abortion the only thing that matters if we were to, you know, vote in the next election? Like, what if we had a candidate who was absolutely, totally pro-life, but in other areas they were completely opposite of all of our other values? Mm-hmm. Should we vote for an establishment politician who is pro-choice, and yet they would preserve the stability of society? Or should we go for someone who wants to hit the gas pedal on dismantling abortion? But what if it was for reasons that were not, you know, not what you might call holy? What if they were selfish reasons?
Oh, they're making abortion illegal out of political expediency, like to get votes?
No, I'm saying what would a pro-life candidate have to do to outweigh the benefit of being pro-life?
That's a very clear question. George,
yeah, no, I think, George, that's a fair question. Before I continue, you talked about we. Do you identify as pro-life or do you identify as pro-choice?
I'm sorry, I'm pro-choice. But okay. I was interested in asking that one question about
the hypothetical we. Yeah. Sure. Okay, well, let me address that. Then I have a question for you. When voting for candidates, I agree with you that abortion is not the only issue any more than child labor was not the only issue in 1920, or slavery was the only issue in 1860. Similar also in pre-1945 Germany, the Holocaust wasn't the only issue. There are certainly other issues that affect people, but there can be issues that are of the utmost importance, or issues that do have priority over other issues that we have to consider. So I would say that, first, my political beliefs don't have a way into this, whether they're conservative or whatever they may be. I'm a Catholic first, and everything else comes after that. But I would say that as a Catholic who believes in upholding the teachings of the Church, when I go to vote, I vote in order to, as my highest priority, make sure that the people in my country and also in the world their intrinsic rights and intrinsic dignity are protected. So I'll want to vote for candidates who share that view. So in general, I would not vote for someone who thought that a certain group of human beings were not persons. So if there's a candidate who thought African Americans were not persons, they don't get my vote. If there's a candidate who thinks immigrants and refugees aren't persons, they don't get my vote. If there's a candidate who thinks unborn children are not persons, they don't get my vote. There may be cases, however, where, unfortunately, you get two pretty bad, crummy options. I think that in the past election cycle, for many people felt that seemed to go on interminably, that was a feeling many people had and have had about politics for a long time. You get, well, what do I do when two people just seem really bad? Well, I would just try to pick the lesser of two evils. So I would just look at both candidates and say, okay, there's things we can disagree on. Like, we can disagree on what is the best way to alleviate poverty, whether it's through direct payments to the poor or by creating labor conditions where businesses can grow. People can have reasonable disagreement over things like that to alleviate poverty. You can't reasonably disagree over something like saying, well, the best way to alleviate poverty is to systematically kill the homeless. Well, there you can't have reasonable disagreement. So I would look at the two candidates. Let's say there's one who says they're pro-choice, another says they're pro-life. And I'd say, well, what intrinsic evils do they support? The pro-choice one supports the intrinsic evil of abortion. The pro-life one, I would say, what could they do to disqualify my vote? Well, if they also supported, let's say, a preemptive nuclear war that threatened to kill millions or billions of innocent human beings without justification, that could disqualify them in my position. But what I would do is, with the hypothetical candidates, is look at their stances on intrinsic evils, things you can't reasonably disagree over, and I would pick the one that has the least intrinsic evils. Though for me, many times, and I'd say nearly all the time, I can't imagine it being any other way, the one who is not in favor of ending over a million children's lives in our country through abortion probably is the lesser of two evils. So that's the best I can give you, especially when we're only talking about hypothetical candidates. Do you see what I'm saying here?
Yes, and when you bring up, you know, it is a simple matter if we were comparing numbers of potential lives lost, you know, war, lots of abortions, you know, eugenics, executions, euthanasia. You know, when it's human lives on the line, I definitely see where you're coming from, absolutely. Do you think that quality of life for a smaller number of people ever comes into the equation? What if we had a totally pro-life person, but they just didn't like journalists and they wanted to lock them up? Do you think the number of locked up journalists ever kind of weighs heavily against the number of abortions that are, you know, taken, that happen in a free, in a, maybe you might disagree with me calling it a free society, but
if they're locking up journalists, it really does cease to be free, though it seems that our hypotheticals are dangerously treading into other areas. But I mean, yeah, you could say, well, what do we do in the case of the terrible person who opposes legal abortion? What I would say is, well, let's flip the tables around a bit. And this might actually help, because I think you could see where I'm coming from then. George, is there anything a pro-choice candidate could do that would make you lose your vote? For example, let's say there was a pro-life candidate who wants to make abortion illegal, a pro-choice candidate who wants to keep it legal, but that pro-choice candidate also supports locking up journalists. What do you do in that case?
Oh, yeah, I can totally see where you're coming from, because I like doing that. What you do, asking questions, asking good questions. We got to flip it around, see if it works the other way.
Right.
So I can totally imagine a scenario where someone who, you know, on one subject I agree with, but I would see that the other, I'd call it a systemic philosophy.
So what would be your gut then for you as a pro-choice person? I've got a pro-choice candidate, but he also does these other bad things. Do you still support them, or do you go and vote for the pro-life person?
Oh, I would definitely have to go with someone who is, if they had, you know, if they could maintain the freedom of our society, and the trade-off would be, well, I'm going to put more restrictions on abortion. Maybe one day there won't be any abortions. How they go about that, they could do it in a bad way, they could do it in a destructive way, they could do it in a very constructive way. So I can definitely, go with you on that.
Oh, wow. That's an interesting approach that you would actually, if for you, something that is worse than abortion being illegal would be threats to freedom of the press and other things like that. So I think that ultimately when it comes down to these cases, what all people will do is they're going to say, well, you elect a candidate, they hold different views, and on issues we can disagree about, and then on issues we cannot reasonably disagree or intrinsic evils, then you have to sort them. And for me, I would say, well, even though freedom of the press is a very, very important thing, I would still hold that the right to life is the most basic and fundamental right that we have, and that if the right to life is threatened for even a small group, but especially a large group of people, then everyone's right to life is threatened, that we have to secure first people's basic right to live and then move on to their other basic rights, the right to freedom, the right to associate, the right to marry, and other things like this. So we do need to weigh them, but I think that what's hard, before we have to go to a break here, George, is that since most people, even pro-lifers, aren't used to thinking of the unborn like fellow born human beings, sometimes we drop them in our weight of what intrinsic evils are more pressing because, you know, we don't see the unborn on a daily basis. So they get dropped. Whereas if we were 150 years ago voting for slavery versus someone who, you know, threatens freedom of the press or voting about things such as whether it should be legal to rape people or not, whether women should have basic rights, I think people can see that we have to look at the most basic rights first, and the most basic of those would be the right to life. And the unborn are just as human as born people. So that's why I think that as we elect leaders, that should take a top priority when we're looking at what they believe. But thank you for calling in, and hopefully we'll hear back from you another time.
Why are you pro-choice is our topic today. We're not looking for pro-life callers, which may seem strange for Catholic Answers Live. We're looking for folks who disagree with the position that the Catholic Church takes, a position that not only the Catholic Church takes. Many, many reasoned people take the position that human life needs to be protected from conception to natural death. That is our position. If you disagree with that position, if you are a pro-choice person, we're very happy to take your call today and discuss it. 888-318-7884 is the number. This is Catholic Answers Live. We'll be right back.
Why are you pro-choice? Call now. Trent is waiting to talk to you.
Hello, my friends. This is Christopher Check, president of Catholic Answers, and I'm challenging you to take the 20 Answers Challenge. Catholic Answers 20 Answers series offers clear arguments so anyone can master defending the fundamentals of our Catholic faith. They also arm the reader to converse intelligently about critical moral and cultural topics facing the church today, such as abortion, end-of-life issues, and the growth of Islam. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the complete set of all 20 books in the series, we will cut the price in half, and we're challenging you to read them all by the end of Lent. What a great preparation for Easter. But wait, there's more. Catholic Answers is going to take $10 from each set purchased and use it to provide materials to our good friends at St. Paul Street Evangelization so they can do what they do best, hit the streets, and share the Catholic faith. That's $10 from every set you purchase going to help our fellow workers in the vineyard. You win, St. Paul Street Evangelization wins, the Catholic Church wins. That's a win-win-win. Let's do something great for the kingdom. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today. In fact, why not buy two sets and challenge a friend to take the 20 Answers Challenge? That's 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com.
Is it possible to know when life begins? Shouldn't women be able to control their own bodies? What if a pregnant woman's life is in danger? In 20 Answers Abortion, you'll find smart, solid answers to these questions and many more. You'll deepen your understanding of this critical moral issue and gain the knowledge you need to explain it to others. 20 Answers Abortion is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Hello and welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Why are you pro-choice? That is our topic today. 888-318-7884 is the number. I wanted to give a little special greeting to our Chaldean Catholic brothers and sisters today. They're beginning their three-day mini-season of Ba'utha, a time when Chaldean Catholics fast and pray, imitating the Ninevites who accepted the correction of the prophet Jonah and turned from their sins back to God. That seems kind of appropriate. I mean, I shouldn't be judgmental, but that seems like a good one for today. So special greetings to all our brothers and sisters of the Chaldean Catholic Church. Our topic again, why are you pro-choice? We are live on Facebook, Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope, which is associated with Twitter. That's the live feed from Twitter. So if you're on Twitter, you can find us on Periscope today. Let's go back to the phone. Well, Trent Horn, I should say, apologist here at Catholic Answers, is addressing your questions and concerns today. We'll go to Mark in Portland, Oregon. Mark, you are on with Trent Horn.
Hello there.
Hi.
Yeah, well, the long and the short of it is I'm pro-choice because I don't see the option as being viable.
What option are you speaking of?
Well, what's your option to being pro-choice?
You mean alternative to being pro-choice?
Yeah.
Well, I would say that we make it, we restore the right to life that unborn human beings once had, and so we make it illegal to directly harm them with something like abortion. So that's something that unborn children had for a long time and have in greater extent in many other countries. And because they're human beings, they deserve that legal protection. So I think it is just to restore it. So that, I guess that would be the alternative to the pro-choice position.
Right. And history has shown us what happens when abortion is illegal.
What do you mean by that?
Well, what have we seen in the past? For example, we had an argument quite a few years ago about whether or not to make abortion illegal. We chose to make it legal in order
you mean the Supreme Court
to basically staunch the bleeding, no pun intended, that was occurring in the streets, in the back alleys, in nunneries, in abbots, in religious institutions, all over the world. So the option at that time was to go and have an illegal abortion, or have a legal abortion under the care of a doctor where you can be reasonably certain that the woman is going to be protected and the child, for the most part, will be, if it's a viable child, will be protected.
Wait. I don't see how abortion, even if the child is viable, abortion ends the child's life. The alternative is called childbirth. So for the most part, the child is killed, right?
Wait. So you're referring to a zygote as a child. Is that what you're saying?
I'm saying a zygote is a member of the human species, and the term child is a shorthand reference for a very young member of the human species. So a child would be anyone in the zygote, fetal, embryonic, infant, toddler, the stages of life. All of those are children. Yes.
Suggesting they have the same, let's use the term value because I think you'd appreciate that. You're suggesting they have the same value as an adult.
I'm saying that all human beings, regardless of their age or their functional ability, have the same basic intrinsic value. That because they are human, they have the same basic right to life, regardless of how old or young they are.
So, the mother or the person that is going to be bled out in the back alley is of less value? Is that what you're saying, than a zygote?
No, I didn't say that at all. So I'm saying, for example, if someone kills a pregnant woman, if an illegal abortion provider killed a pregnant woman through an illegal abortion, he should be guilty of killing two people because both the woman and child have equal rights. It seems to me, Mark, that the argument you're making is that we should make it legal for bigger people to kill smaller people so that it's safer for the bigger people. Is that the argument you're making?
No, I wouldn't say that.
Well, what was wrong with my summary?
No, let me finish, please.
Go ahead.
I'm saying the argument that I'm making is that you have a choice here for an abortion. There's going to be an abortion one way or another. I mean, either it's going to be legal or illegal. So, Mark, I would agree with you.
Mark, I'll find agreement, then you can continue. I agree with you if abortion is illegal. Some people will still choose to have abortions, just as robbing banks and beating spouses is illegal, but people still choose to do it. That doesn't mean it's right or that we should make it legal.
Okay, hold on a second here. You're saying robbing or beating a spouse or robbing a bank is the same?
Is the same as abortion?
You're saying there's an equivalent choice there?
Yeah, what I'm saying is that people...
You're saying my choice to rob a bank or beat my wife is an equivalent choice to a pregnant woman getting an abortion.
I would say to you, it's actually in many cases it would not be equivalent because assault or bank robbery doesn't necessarily entail that you will kill somebody. But abortion involves killing a small human being, and killing is worse than hurting people.
Are you suggesting the mother's not aware of that?
Am I suggesting, I think that some women who might choose abortion may be aware of that. Others may be unaware of that, but a person's psychological state, Mark, can I finish please?
Yeah.
Okay. A person's psychological state or their emotional feeling towards another human being, that does not change whether that human being has a right to life or not. So let me go back to my basic question then for you, just in, 'cause with your argument, tell me this statement, if you agree or disagree with it. Should we make it legal for bigger people to kill smaller people because we want to make it safer for the bigger people? Does that make sense to you?
No, it doesn't make sense. I mean, it's nothing to do with the argument. I don't understand.
Okay, so what is abortion? So abortion is a mother who would be, or the abortion provider in this case, who's doing the abortion, is the bigger person. The adult, the grown-up, is going to end the life of the child, who is the smaller person. So bigger person ends the life of smaller person.
Right.
And you are saying it should be legal to do that so that it is safer for the bigger person involved.
No, what I'm saying is that your choice, what you're suggesting, is that we go back to the 1930s or the 20s or the 16th century or 15th century or pick a period where these occurrences are going to occur. Women are going to get pregnant. Men are going to pay for prostitution. People are going to do drugs.
Are people going to murder each other?
Occur.
Mark, are people still going to murder each other even though murder is illegal?
Yes, of course they will. But what you're suggesting is that we put our rules back into a position where the choice is now not whether or not I have an abortion or not whether or not it is whether or not this woman can go on to a normal life afterwards and, you know, possibly have a child in wedlock or however it works out.
Mm-hmm.
You're not giving her that choice. What you're saying is that now all of a sudden this is completely illegal. You're going to go and be butchered by somebody in the back alley somewhere because that is the option.
Why can't they choose to give birth to the child?
But they won't. We know they won't.
Is every woman not going to do that?
The option, no, the suggestion you're giving us is that we should go back to the 16th century. And that's completely unreasonable.
So back when
the Catholic Church is famous for changing its mind on things when all of a sudden there's no other option.
Okay,
and
Mark, we're not talking about the Catholic Church. We're not talking about things like that. What we're talking about is which human beings should have the right to life. And so you've tried to talk around it, but ultimately your position is saying that, well, if a bigger person's going to hurt a smaller person, if crime's going to happen, we should make it legal so it's safer for the criminal. That's a barbaric way to look at things. People can choose to not have abortions. They can choose life, and we should promote that in a civilized society.
We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Hey everyone, this is Carlo Broussard. I've got a challenge for you. It's called the 20 Answers Challenge. Catholic Answers 20 Answers series offers hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the church and the world. Here's how the challenge works. When you purchase the sampler of all 20 books in the series, we're going to knock the price in half. And we're challenging you to finish them all this Lent and Easter season. Then, we're going to take $10 from each set purchase and provide materials to our friends at St. Paul Street Evangelization so they can do what they do best, hit the streets and share the Catholic faith. That's $10 from every set you purchase, going to help our fellow workers in the vineyard. You win, St. Paul Street Evangelization wins, the Catholic Church wins. That's a win-win-win. Together, we can be a part of something great. Call 1-888-291-8000 or visit the shop at Catholic.com now to get your set and begin taking the 20 Answers Challenge today.
What does it mean to say that Scripture is inspired? Why don't Catholics believe that the Bible is the sole rule of faith? Do Christians have to follow all the strange and archaic laws found in the Old Testament? 20 Answers the Bible offers a truly Catholic perspective on Scripture, showing how it harmonizes with God's revelation in sacred tradition and with the teaching authority of the Church. 20 Answers the Bible is part of the 20 Answers series from Catholic Answers, offering hard facts, powerful arguments, and clear explanations of the most important topics facing the Church and the world, all in a compact, easy-to-read package. Visit shop.catholic.com today and take a look at this exciting new series from Catholic Answers Press.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. So happy to have you here with us today. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our topic, why are you pro-choice? Trent Horn is taking your questions. And Trent, before we went to the break, you were addressing the question of whether the fact that you have safer methods of abortion is a good idea because it allows big people essentially to more safely attack small people.
Yeah,
am I right on that?
Yeah, well, the argument Mark was putting forward was that, well, abortion's going to happen anyways, so let's make it safe. And actually, I would be completely in favor of legal abortion. I would be totally in favor of abortion if abortion were as safe for the child as it currently is for the mother. You see what I mean by that?
I see. I'm actually a little bit stunned by that. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
If it is as safe for the child as it is for the mother,
yeah,
then I would be totally in favor of it. But the problem is, abortion procedures, 50% of the people involved die. That's too high of a fatality rate to say that abortion is safe. And now Mark and I went back and forth, well, can you say a zygote is a child or not? And that actually got to the root of our issue. And he simply presented no evidence to show that they aren't. It was just simply an incredulous rhetorical question. And that's just an assertion, which can be dismissed because it has no evidence behind it. But I thought there was a point he made I wanted to tie up on before we moved on, that he said that you just want to go back to the 16th century.
Yep.
You know, you just want to go back into the past as if – but actually – it is he and others who support legal abortion with these pragmatic arguments that want to go back to the 16th century when, for example, the Atlantic slave trade was justified by saying, well, this is better for everyone and people are going to do this anyways. And without the law behind them, they could be hurt or killed. So throughout history, people have tried to justify crimes against innocent people, like the Nazis, for example. The Nazis didn't just say, well, let's just kill everybody. We have no reason behind it. They gave propagandistic arguments to the people always think, it's funny. They think, well, I would have never done that. I would have never.
I know.
I would have fought the Nazis. I would have never. You don't understand that the people there, they were taken advantage, not taken advantage of, but they were given reasons that many of them said, well, yeah, these Jews might have been sympathizing with the communists and they'll invade and destabilize our country. And they were told all of these things that people, to kill other human beings, they need to dehumanize the human beings,
right,
and then rationalize the killing. And that's what happens to abortion. So when I say I want to restore the right to life of the unborn, I'm not going back to barbarisms of the past. Rather, it is those who are in favor of legal abortion who want to go back to the barbaric practice of crafting the law so it protects bigger, stronger, more powerful people and exploits weaker, defenseless people, and even says that they're not really people. So something else to consider when this is brought up. So when people bring up, well, abortion should be legal so that it's safe, I don't want to immediately respond, safe for who, the mother or the child? Right. And that gets us back to the central issue.
And isn't the basic kind of trend of the modern period, when considered rightly, a trend towards including more and more people under the protections of the law, not fewer and fewer? So if you're going to go with the trend of, you know, well, for example, women gaining the vote or racial laws being overthrown, you know, racist laws basically being overthrown, more and more people are supposed to be welcomed in. We're not supposed to say fewer and fewer.
Yeah, I would say that we do no harm when we expand the human community to include our fellow human beings.
Yes.
So that is progress, true progress, to understand that all people are treated equally and understood for who they are, what their genuine and authentic identity is. And their identity doesn't come from their functional abilities. It comes from their humanity. And that's what it means to say, well, we treat people in a humane way. Is to say, well, we recognize their humanity. It's funny. We even say, well, the American Humane Society treats animals well. And people can distort that, say, well, no, animals are not people. But the reason we treat them well is because we are people. And we understand that you ought not cause suffering or harm without a good reason.
Yep.
And whereas in the animal kingdom, there is no animal humane society. They just steal from one another, forcibly copulate, and eat each other.
But or humans, sometimes they eat us.
Or us, yeah.
I find that rude. I find that extremely rude.
Well, it's so hard. You know, you've got like the environmentalists out there and just like, we've got to save these endangered species. And look at the, and he falls overboard and the great white shark gets him. He's like, I've done so much for you. How ungrateful are you? But that's because, that's not an argument to say animals don't matter, we should be cruel to animals. It's simply saying that humanity, humans, have intrinsic moral dignity and they have intrinsic moral rights. And we ought to recognize that dignity in every human being, and we ought to exhort humans to act in moral ways with one another and with any other part of God's creation.
888-318-7884 is the number. We go to Anonymous calling from Canada. Anonymous, you are on with Trent Horn. Why are you pro-choice?
Hi there. I'm pro-choice because of the bodily rights argument. The bodily rights argument basically, to me, says that no one has a right to another person's body without their consent. And what I like about this argument is it kind of simplifies things, gets away from whether or not a fetus is a person and all that. It doesn't really matter to the argument. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it also exposes the idea that abortion is murder as being false.
Right, well, so you're saying murder would be unlawful killing, but this is not unlawful or malicious killing. That when you say right to refuse, Anonymous, do you mean that, well, just as if I'm in the hospital, or if you're in the hospital and you need my kidney, and I don't give you my kidney, and you die, I didn't murder you.
Right, right.
Okay.
I think we would all agree with that.
Yes.
And it even goes beyond, I mean, even if I was in the hospital and I needed a kidney, and another person had just died, but has not yet given consent to organ donation, I still couldn't take someone's kidney, even though they're no longer living.
But suppose, let me change the example a little bit for you. Suppose you are in the hospital, you need a kidney, and I give you my kidney, and you're living, and I say, you have no right to use my kidney, so I'm going to take it back. And when I take it back, that kills you. I think that that is closer to abortion, because abortion is not merely choosing to not donate a body to help someone who's dying. It's causing someone to be dependent on you and then taking away their only source of life. So I think the example is not parallel to pregnancy. Do you see where I'm going?
I see where you're going, but I don't agree. Even by causing someone to require a kidney or something, right? I think you still don't have a right to take to somebody else's body. So, for example, we all get in our cars, right, and drive around knowing full well that we could get in an accident and potentially injure someone. We might even cause the accident and cause someone to require some kind of donation, or they might die. It still gives that no right to that person to take somebody else's organs.
And I see what you're saying, Anonymous, but I would argue the difference here is that there is no intrinsic connection of responsibility between driving a car and donating my body to save another person's life, even if I cause an accident where they need my blood or they need my kidney to live. I haven't done anything or entered into anything where I'm morally obligated to help them. That driving a car has no connection to providing my body to aid another person. Whereas having sexual intercourse, I think it clearly has an intrinsic connection to providing an unborn child with your body for two reasons. One, kidneys or my blood, it's very clear they are for my body. But when you look at like the uterus, we would say, well, what is the uterus for? Well, clearly it's for the life of a child. And then second, moving on from that, let's see. Well, I had the train of thought that I was going with that, that there's no intrinsic. Here was the connection. To show the connection between sex and pregnancy, do you see it's compelling that many people refer to sex euphemistically as making babies?
Yes. Yeah.
But we don't refer to driving a car euphemistically as hooking myself up to someone or donating blood. But we do see that connection between sex and pregnancy.
Well, there are many euphemisms for sex that we could talk about.
That's just what I'm just saying here, that when two people engage in an act that is ordered towards creating a helpless human being, don't they have a responsibility to that human being? So, for example, that's why we say it's why we say fathers have to provide child support, for example.
Yeah. Okay, I see what you're saying, and I fundamentally disagree.
With what?
Well, just the notion that sex is only ever, at least in part, for procreation.
That wasn't my argument. I'm not saying it's only for that. I'm saying it's ordered towards that. In the same way that eating chocolate cake is ordered towards gaining calories, but obviously many people eat chocolate cake not to gain calories. They enjoy the flavor. May eat in spite of what happens, but there's clearly a connection between the two at its primary level. And I would say that there's that similar connection between sex and pregnancy, much to the effect that when people have sex and they're unable to cause pregnancy, we say that they are sick or they're infertile, and so they have a medical problem. So I think that puts it more towards the side that I'm making.
Well, yeah, again, I disagree that sex is ordered specifically for that.
What is sex ordered towards? What is it for?
Well, it's for many things.
What would you say at its most fundamental level it's ordered towards?
Intimacy.
So there's
creating
nothing.
Bond?
So there would be nothing wrong than having sexual union with, let's say, an animal or a close family member, since ultimately it's just about intimacy and bonds.
Yeah, well, no, I didn't say that.
Well, I guess for me that if sexual union at its most at its fundamental level is just about intimacy and bonds, is there ever people you should not be?
I didn't say it was just for that.
Okay.
So yeah.
But I'm talking about what's its most fundamental purpose for.
Yeah, that would I agree. And but it's not, here's the thing though, it's not for me to say what it is for in other people's relationships.
Yeah, we can take a step back from that, because I think you and I agree when people have sex, many times, the regular rule is it creates human beings, it creates children. Do those parents have obligations to those human beings they create?
Yes, they do, but those obligations do not include organ donation. Or what? Their kids do not have a right to take or use their parents' body.
Okay, so when that child they create is unborn or fetal, you said that they do have obligations to them, just not organ donation. What would be those obligations they do have?
Sorry, I thought you were talking about a live child.
Yes, a living one in the womb that they create.
What obligation would they have?
Do they have any obligations to that child? They engage in sex, the child comes into existence, they live in the womb, naturally ordered for them to live in. Do they have any obligations to that human being they have created?
Well, they may not even know that they have the child in the womb.
Well, let's say they do know that other people don't go get abortions unless they know they have created such a they've created something.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing before we have to go to a break, do they have any obligations at all? Because it seems to me your position is two people can engage in an act that creates a human being, and yet they have no obligations to care for that human being. That seems odd to me.
It may be the fact that they do have a moral obligation in that they would refrain from smoking, refrain from drinking, and so on. I think it would be hard to put a legal obligation on that.
Would they have a moral if they have a moral obligation to not hurt a child with smoking or drinking, could they at least have a moral obligation to not hurt the child with abortion?
Yeah, so I don't see abortion as the objective as hurting the child. I see it as a right to refuse their bodily organs.
Well, but isn't that similar then to a born woman has a two-month-old that she refuses to breastfeed at home and she leaves in the crib? Is she starving the child, or is she just refusing to let the child use her body?
Well, she would have an obligation to feed the child, but she wouldn't have to feed it breast milk. She could feed it formula.
Let's say all that she had. Let's say she's a very poor woman in a rural area. All she has is her own breast milk. Does she then now have an obligation to sustain that child with her body?
I don't know. I'd have to think about that one. We're getting pretty far afield from the from how abortion is used, you know, in most cases, though.
Okay, but unfortunately, we'll have to go to a break. We went longer with this one, but I think actually we're not far afield that we started with the bodily rights argument, and now we've ended with a case with a born individual, a breastfeeding woman, who that is the only way she can care for a two-month-old, that if she were to refuse to let the child have access to her body, we wouldn't call that a moral right to refuse. We would call it an immoral act of starvation. And I would say abortion is the same thing. It's not merely refusing to let a child use an organ like a kidney. It is evicting a child, causing their death in a violent way from the organ designed to sustain them, that the obligations from the parents who the child has been entrusted to, that the mother and father who have obligations to the child, are unjustly causing the child's death, not merely refusing to provide care to a stranger or things like that. So I would recommend, though, if you want to learn more about my take on this argument, in Chapter 8 of my book, Persuasive Pro-Life, I have a whole treatment of bodily rights arguments, including the specific right to refuse argument. But thank you for calling in. Maybe we'll hear back from you another time.
Thanks, Anonymous. Why are you pro-choice? That's our topic today on Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884 is the number. Taking your questions is Trent Horn. I'm Cy Kellett, your host, and we will be right back.
Catholic Answers Live.
Do you want to end abortion, halt the attack on traditional marriage, and ensure religious freedom for ourselves and for our grandchildren? To do this, we must convert the culture. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a grassroots initiative that recognizes this need and takes it to the streets. If you're interested in peacefully sharing the gospel in your area, visit streetevangelization.com to learn more.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Mark 6:53, as soon as Jesus and his disciples landed at Gennesaret and left the boat, people began to bring the sick to him on mats. Whatever villages he entered, they laid the sick in the marketplaces and begged that they might only touch the tassel of his cloak. The combination of faith and humility always brought miracles, and it still does. In a culture of cynicism and arrogance, such virtues are so often nowhere to be found until we hurt. On September 11, 2001, concerns over the separation of church and state and political correctness were not in evidence on the streets of New York City, when religious pictures and vigilites lined so many sidewalks. For a time, America was humbled and began to walk with the Lord. We've drifted again. It's time for America to once again embrace the cross. As always, it remains our only hope. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Tomorrow, open forum. Any question on any topic having to do with religion, with the Catholic faith, with the philosophy of religion, more than welcome tomorrow. Today, we are welcoming questions. No, really, we're welcoming answers to the question, why are you pro-choice? Taking your comments and questions is Trent Horn, apologist here at Catholic Answers Live. And we go to John in Boston, Massachusetts. John, you're on with Trent Horn.
Gentlemen. Yes. Hello. I'm more than pro-choice. I consider myself pro-abortion. You know, you could almost say pro-death, because pro-life is the opposite. You know, it was the Pope, John Paul II, I believe, who said abortion was a Holocaust. You heard that. You remember that, right? And you mentioned the Holocaust multiple times in the past hour with the Nazis. So I've noticed since Roe v. Wade, 73, where there was no referendum or plebiscite for the American people to vote on abortion, I think if there had been, they would never have allowed it. I think it would have been voted down. That not only this whole false idea of women's right to choose, but really what is going on here, it seems to me, my whole life, I've been watching this since 73, is a real racial demographic change in America that Bill Clinton liked to talk about 25 years ago as president, that there was something going on. We see how 44 years of abortion in America, a million and a half a year, is over 60 million Americans wiped out, a whole generation.
So, John, we need you to get to the point. Why are you pro-choice?
The reason I'm pro-choice is because you take the word Gentile. I always grew up as a Christian, a Roman Catholic, considered myself a Gentile. I thought it just meant Christian, someone who was non-Jewish, a Gentile. But actually, in the Paleo-Hebraic, original Hebrew, it means enemy. Like the word Apache, Indian, means enemy to everybody, and the word Gentile means enemy. So I'm considered the enemy. Now, Jesus...
Well, hang on, John. John, I need you to give me one sentence now. I'm sorry, but I'm just not following. I need you to give me one sentence. You are pro-choice because?
Because my enemies want to destroy me. I just say this. I was listening to the great Paul Krugman, writes for the New York Times, a great economist, great American, great Zionist. He has books in the library. He's a Nobel laureate. He looks like a rabbi with a long beard when he has that going on. He was on TV recently, a month or so ago, saying they asked him, what do you think of the extermination from the Latin to drive away, drive out, or destroy, destruction of the Euro-Americans, meaning the white race in America? He said, good, that's good.
John, wait, I gotta. You said your enemies. Who are specifically your enemies?
Yeah, Jesus had enemies. He went after
John. Your enemies you're talking about?
I'm talking about the same ones that Jesus went after. He picked up a weapon. The Prince of Peace, the Lamb of God, picks up a weapon to go after.
John, do you think the Jews are your enemy?
I say that Jesus, if you read 1,000 chapters in the Bible, I know Catholics...
Okay, John, this is kind of weird to me, because normally if I ask someone like Cy, are the Jews your enemy? I could get a pretty easy yes or no answer. It's going to be no.
Yeah, and I thought I was going to get to answer. No, I really want to answer that one, Trent. Don't just go by. Don't gloss that.
Sigh, don't, you know, don't go on and on about all this. So you know what? No, I'm not going to entertain this anymore, John. Yeah. I appreciate that you called in, and I'm happy to discuss with you the issue of abortion. But from somebody who half their family is Jewish, whose grandfather changed his name because he was beaten up in the Navy for being a Jew, I'm not going to entertain hatred and anti-Semitism on this show.
Thanks, Trent. I think you picked up on it quicker than I did, but thanks.
I think you're exactly right. I'm not going to do that. So you're welcome to come back, and I want to have a conversation. And I don't think we're going to be able, you know, about this subject or others. But you know what? It's so unfortunate. We live in a world where unborn children, their humanity is doubted and denied, and I have to fight for that. I am grateful at least that Jewish people and other marginalized people, while there are people who still deny their humanity, who knows, maybe that was part of this call, I don't know, they're not being exterminated as they were 60 years ago, and the unborn are being exterminated. So I'm not going to entertain that. Just not going to. On this show, I want to talk about abortion because you know what? The unborn are losing their lives at a systematic rate. And the only way we're going to change that is by having concrete dialogue about this to change hearts and minds. But you know what? We have reached a consensus, at least in most of the Western world and the civilized world, at least when it comes to nearly all born people. And I'm not going to entertain a conversation right now about that that threatens to roll that back. So I wish you well, and I pray that your heart will change what you think towards the Jewish people, that Paul in Romans 11 says even Israel will be saved, that there is still a place for the Jewish people in God's plan of salvation because God loves everyone. And Jesus did not say the Jews are his enemies. Jesus came to die for both Jews and Gentiles. Gentile does not mean enemy. It just means non-Jew. It's not even a Hebrew word. It comes from a French derivation of a Latin word. It's just a descriptor for those who are not Jewish, that we believe in a God who loves everyone, Jew or Gentile, born or unborn. And I'm going to leave it at that.
Amen, brother. I'll tell you what, I don't think we have time to go to another caller. I want to ask you something, Trent. Do you ever hear the argument? It's kind of, it may be related to that argument we were just hearing, but it's kind of almost an economic or social argument that I feel like people are ashamed to say it, but they carry it in their hearts, which is that, well, those who are being aborted, you look, the crime rate's going way down. I have actually heard that argument, Trent.
That argument, well, we need abortion to deal with crime and issues like this. That actually was popularized in a book called Freakonomics.
Right.
And what the book wasn't about abortion. It was just about the unintended consequences of economics. And they said, well, abortion was made legal in 1973. And then 18 years later in the 90s, crime starts dropping because people aborted these unwanted children who would have grown up to be criminals. Two problems with that. One, that argument from Freakonomics has been challenged as being correlation but not causation. That in the 90s, what's more likely is better police techniques, better law enforcement techniques drop the crime rate, not abortion. And number two, even if you could kill a group of people to reduce crime or poverty rates, well, you should not kill a group of people to do that. That's a case where the solution is worse than the problem you're trying to solve. No, we should respect people's intrinsic rights and values and not kill them to try to improve quality of life for others.
Thank you so much, Trent Horn, for making that point so articulately, repeatedly, and convincingly today on Catholic Answers Live. Tomorrow, open forum on Catholic Answers Live. Any question you've got on any aspect of Catholic life or faith, thank you so much for joining us here today. We'll see you again tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.